are listening to We Saw the Devil, an investigative and conversational true crime podcast that deep dives into fascinating criminal cases that are solved, unsolved, or ongoing. From America's Lori Vallow to Germany's Armin Mivas, we examine and discuss the world's most shocking cases. If you're enjoying the show, don't forget to follow us online. Check us out at WeSawTheDevil.com and WeSawTheDevil on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And don't forget, you can become part of the show by backing us on Patreon. Hello, everyone. You are listening to We Saw the Devil. This is Robin, and I am here with an update episode on the Moscow murders out of Idaho. And guys, I'm going to be completely honest with you. I have been so insanely busy. I know that I promised an episode on Friday, part two of The Darkness of Disney, like The Dark Side of Disney, where I am delving into the history of Walt Disney and how it's not necessarily the happiest place on earth, or brand for that matter, kind of a, you know, biography of him. I am terribly sorry that I was not able to actually get that out on time. And honestly, I'm still researching and writing that next Disney episode. So that will 100%, hand to God, will be the second episode this week. So please, if you can find it in your heart to forgive me for being so late yet again, I would sincerely appreciate it. I am working and aiming for achieving some sense of consistency. I think that's honestly going to be my New Year's resolution. It certainly is not going to be going to the gym. So that being said, this is going to be an update episode with everything that we know about the Moscow, Idaho murders. The last episode, the news update that I put out on a series of cases, I actually published that 2 days after I recorded it. So the info, a lot can happen in 2 days, as all of you know. If you look at any of the trials that we've covered either on this podcast or just in the news in general, a lot can transpire in 2 days. And, you know, honestly, these murders, plural, I guess, out of Idaho have completely just kind of taken over my time. Anytime I'm reading news, I find myself either on the subreddit, on a Facebook group, searching news articles on it. I'm really staying up to date on it, you know, very similar to early Lori Vallow, Gabby Petito, and other cases like that. So that is what this episode is going to be about. Before we get into it, though, let's just get some housekeeping out of the way. You are listening to We Saw the Devil. I'm your host, Robin. You can find us at WeSawTheDevil.com. From there, you can find us across all social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, upcoming TikTok, until it gets banned, I guess, and also the Patreon. As always, if you're liking the show, loving it, and want to show your support, please take 10 seconds out of your day to leave a 5-star review on whatever platform that you're using to listen to this podcast, be it Stitcher, iTunes, you know, any platform at all. Greatly appreciate it, and it lets us, the content creators, know that you're enjoying what we do. Give us the warm and fuzzies. Now, let's just go ahead and get another thing out of the way, because first, I want to address a few questions I've gotten. A handful of you have asked me if I'll be covering the Casey Anthony documentary from Peacock or going over it at all. And I would like to answer you with this nice little wholesome list of 5 things that I would rather be doing than watch her speak. I mean, guys, I'm busy all the time. It's very rare that I find time to devote to a documentary or invest in a documentary. It certainly is not going to be this one. Luckily, I can work from home. And most of the time, guys, most of the time, you know, I know I'm thugging out in like pajama pants and a t-shirt. I am looking like Anne Hathaway when she dreamed a dream. And still, here are 5 things that I would rather do than watch this documentary. 1, I would rather shit in my own hands and then clap. 2, I would sit on an uncovered gas station toilet. 3, I would personally clean out Hannibal Lecter's fridge or put away his leftovers. 4, I would rather pull my armpit hair out with tweezers, hair by hair. And 5, I would rather be stuck in an elevator with Jojo Siwa. So in conclusion, no, I will not be watching Casey Anthony's new documentary series. And I actually watched almost the entire trial. I do believe, in fact, that the jurors did make the correct decision with the information and evidence that they had been given. But I also think that she was likely directly responsible for the death of her child, and that she also conspired with her parents to cover it up. But no interest. I can't think of anything, as my late parents said frequently, I can't think of anything that I lost there. And definitely, if you believe a word that Casey Anthony says, I have beachfront property in Nebraska to sell to you. You probably, if you believe a word she says, you also probably thought that Liver King wasn't on steroids. I mean, there's no logic there. So, moving on from that, let's talk about the murders in Idaho. There's not a lot new, but I've been poring over news. I've rewatched all the press conferences, read through all the press releases again. And there's a lot to talk about. So I just kind of wanted to go over a few things. First, a couple interviews that I found that I think are very important. Number one, Kaylee Gonsalves' dad spoke out and did an interview. And he made several statements that I find really noteworthy here. First, he said that she fought back and had large, well, quote, very large wounds from a sharp object. He also said that the victims were discovered when the two surviving roommates, Dylan and Bethany, couldn't reach them by phone or text. Apparently, it was very abnormal for them not to reply via text or phone the following morning after everyone had a night out. Also, we did learn, too, that Madison and Kaylee used a sorority-designated driver to get home from the food truck. A lot of people were speculating who drove them home, what happened to the creepy guy that was standing on the sidewalk by the truck. And yes, apparently they did, in fact, use a sorority designated driver to actually get them home from grabbing food after they went to the bar. Another really important tidbit is that Kaylee's dad said that they were all killed quickly and didn't suffer, which to me points out to there are some very initial fatal wounds there. She may have fought back, but apparently this was very frenzied and very, very quick, according to Kaylee's father. Something I also found interesting is that they had Kaylee cremated, and he remarked that he sent his daughter to college, but that she came back in an urn. That absolutely broke my heart. If you've seen any of the pictures of her and her father on Facebook or Instagram, they've been posted. They were so, so, so very close. And I can't imagine, as a parent, I mean, I'm not a parent, I don't have kids, but I cannot imagine sending your child to college and just absolute worst case scenario here. But I do have to wonder as well. I mean, they did have Kaylee cremated. And I do see a lot of conversations, especially online, of people being perplexed by that. Why would they have her cremated when she was a murder victim? You know, what if they need to exhume her body and blah, 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 blah. Don't forget, a lot of people are, because the police messed up so badly in the first 48 hours of this investigation. And by that, I mean, they said one thing and then they made multiple retractions. If you listen to the last update episode I did, I went through a couple of them, the retractions that they had to make. They'd make a statement, someone would make a statement, police chief or an investigator, and then they would immediately walk it back the next day. So I think that the level of trust between the university, the community, I mean, my God, the entire internet community as a whole, and this police department is pretty much at bare minimum. And the thing about it, though, is that the FBI is actually involved in this case. So, you know, Kaylee was actually sent, all of the victims were, to Washington State for their autopsies. And I have no doubt in my mind that they were able to do a full autopsy. Obviously, the toxicology report was done. That can take 6 to 8 weeks to come back. So that information hasn't been made public yet, but that is all being done. So I, you know, from everything that I've read and then also consulting with a friend who is an autopsy technician, that should not change anything and should not be a factor whatsoever. Next up, last, is another like heartbreaking tidbit. There are just some statements by the family that just, it's really sad. Kind of pulls at your emotional heartstrings, as it were. So they actually have not had and did not actually have a funeral for Kaylee because no one's been arrested. And her father said that it's Kaylee's mother's worst fear that the perpetrator would actually attend, and that she couldn't stomach the thought of the kid's killers or killer attending the funeral of her daughter, their victim. And I did not think of that. As we all know, sometimes serial killers like to get involved in their murder and the aftermath of it, whether it's joining the search, going to the funeral, contacting the family to see how they can help, or law enforcement. Apparently, we saw this potentially still waiting on that arrest affidavit, but the Delphi murder. So Richard Allen. So yeah, that's heartbreaking. I didn't think of that immediately, but I can't fathom being a family member and having a loved one who was murdered and not being able to get closure myself via funeral for fear that the perpetrator, that the murderer, may actually attend it. No one should have to think of that. Also, Kaylee's sister did an interview with CNews Nation, and it was very, very short, very, very quick, but a couple interesting pieces here. So other than the, you know, usual information, how are you doing? How's the investigation going? One key piece of information that she said is that she and the family, that they know that Kaylee's ex-boyfriend wasn't involved. Excuse me. We know this ex-boyfriend's name is Jack. That he was grieving with them, and they know that he was not involved in any way. Lots and lots and lots and lots of internet sleuths, armchair sleuths. Everyone is saying, potentially, well, not everyone, but a lot of people are speculating that the boyfriend had to have been involved. Also, her sister said that she doesn't understand what, quote, targeted means. She says that it feels alienating because they won't expound upon it. They, meaning the police, law enforcement, they aren't telling her why they have publicly called this a targeted set of killings. Who was targeted? And that just made me wonder. We've heard so much, and there's been such an emphasis on Kaylee as a whole, that I think that we've all assumed that the police have been talking about Kaylee. At least when I'm online or reading in comments on news articles, everyone seems to be focusing primarily on Kaylee. But I have gone through every single police press conference, every single press release. Nowhere has the police stated that Kaylee herself was targeted. So I think that they're referring to the home. And I don't know. It's just very odd how kind of the world, and I'm talking CNN, MSNBC, CNews Nation, Daily Mail, New York Post, everyone is focused on Kaylee primarily. And that was before the news that she potentially had a stalker came out a couple of days ago, which also, by the way, has not been confirmed by police. Police said that they are investigating it, but they have had no information confirming that. So both of those, Kaylee Consalvis's dad and her sister both did interviews. They're both available on YouTube. Highly suggest you check them out. Just a couple little tidbits of information there. Other things that I've learned over the last couple days, and don't forget, guys, we're like 16 days out after the murder. Well, 17 days now after the murder. So it's been now over 2 weeks. There's still no arrest, no person of interest, at least publicly, which we'll discuss that more in a moment. But it's been a while. It's not looking good, right? Okay, so for some other additional tidbits of information that I have come across. So there was a dog in the house. It was Kaylee's dog that she shared with an ex-boyfriend. And first, if you're like me, you're like, what happened to the dog? It is okay. And it is now with Kaylee's parents. It was taken, put into like animal control / services. And then it is now with Kaylee's parents. It was, I believe, a Labradoodle. Secondly, there were rumors that it was barking sometime between 3 and 4 a.m., again, guys, that's unconfirmed. The thinking here is people are trying to figure out, was the dog familiar with the murderer? And I find this a complete non-event and totally irrelevant just as a whole. I have 5 dogs, personally, and each and every one would bark at someone if they entered the house in the middle of the freaking night, whether they knew them or not. It does not matter. In fact, every person I know who has a dog, even if they are familiar with me, if I go into someone's house at 3 or 4 a.m., their dog is probably going to bark until they get a, you know, a good look or, you know, or so forth. I just can't fathom that that is actually of importance. It was also said that after Kaylee and Madison returned home from the bar, they took the dog out together, like, you know, final potty time before they turned in for the night. So that I find that piece of information to be very important. Could someone have been outside and seen them at, you know, what, 2 a.m. Outside, caught their eye? Did someone follow them home? It is, I think, important to note that they were, in fact, outside together at that time. Also, five cars were towed yesterday, and I'm talking all of the roommates, all of their vehicles, all of them were towed. Apparently, they're all being brought in and being processed for forensic evidence. So that is also important as well. Previously, during the investigation, people have seen investigators going through the cars and taking some things, but nothing major. And it took all day yesterday, Tuesday, for tow trucks to come and slowly tow all of the vehicles away. Also, and two guys that I started following, especially during the Gabby Petito case, because they were kind of like, you know, the go-to voices of the news, JB of WFLA, and then also Brian Enten, whom many of you know from the Gabby Petito case. I love him. I adore him. So JB says that, you know, he and Brian have both actually been in Moscow. And JB said that police told him officially that there is no public, you know, there's no person of interest in the case at this time. At least they are saying that publicly. As we have seen time and time and time again, that does not necessarily mean that they don't have a person of interest internally. They may be preserving the case, not wanting to ruin it. They may have a person in mind and they're kind of waiting for, you know, them to do something, them to slip up, some evidence or testing, DNA, you know, something like that to come back. And also, something that I found kind of troubling, but also simultaneously interesting, is that the timeline of all of this has been really bizarre. Ethan and Zanna went to a frat party at the Sigma Chi frat house that night. And there was apparently some sort of fight or altercation, and the police were called. Now, no word that the police actually showed up, no word on who was involved or what exactly transpired at that party. But we do know that some sort of altercation, that they were present at a frat party and some sort of altercation took place. Now, the timeline. Zanna told her father in a phone call that she had with him that she was at home watching a movie at midnight. At midnight. And for some reason, the police have been incredibly tight-lipped on this timeline. You know, we even Kaylee's sister, in her interview, that's one of the pieces that she brought up. She said that, almost a direct quote here, it's really frustrating that the police have been wrong about the timeline, off by 15 to 20 minutes. A lot, as you guys know, can transpire in 15 to 20 minutes. So what time did Ethan and Zanna get home? They supposedly arrived at the party between like 8:30, 8:45, and 9. Okay, put them there, you know, at that time. Are we supposed to believe that they only stayed there for, you know, 3 hours, 3.5 hours? Did they come home sooner? Did they come home later? The goalposts of the timeline keep moving a little bit. And I feel like, you know, in all of the sources, official confirmed sources that I've seen, that actually hasn't been quite nailed down just yet. So that's just, we're kind of waiting for more information from the police, the FBI, someone, investigators, to finalize that timeline. And as I said, guys, we are day 17 out from the murders, and we have no person of interest, at least publicly, no arrest, and the police have really, really been kind of tight-lipped and quiet on the specifics of the case, other than, you know, making grandiose statements and then walking them back almost immediately. And I feel like the longer this goes without a suspect, at least publicly, like the less information that's made public, the more likely that it is that the murderer was someone random. I personally believe, with the information that we have thus far, I believe that this is a random attack. However, I did see a video of a retired FBI investigator, and he actually drove to the street in the location of the murders. You know, if you've seen pictures of it, It's a three-story house. It was originally one story and then had the second and third floors built onto it. It's literally built like into a hill. The back of the house actually is like, you know, inside of a hill, basically. And this retired FBI investigator actually drove there. And he describes it, and he's like, there's only one way out of here if you're driving. So that would either mean that the murderer came through the woods, which are behind the house. There's some wood. There's a wooded area. He walked, or if he drove, it was indeed very, very targeted, or it was a very, very, very confident random person, someone who wasn't scared. As you know, you know, when it comes to murders, there's almost like a checklist of things that you look for in terms of, or even just someone breaking into your house, right? They don't like closed off driveways or cul-de-sacs or things like that. They want multiple exit points, easy exit. This house had one exit point if you were driving. That's it. So it, you know, that the investigator thinks that it would be incredibly targeted. Someone who knew the students, who knew them, a friend of a friend, had dealings with them, knew their comings and goings, someone who had been surveilling them for a little bit, or just a very, very confident random person. It's also interesting, side note too, that there's no reward in this case so far. There's no reward. The law enforcement's not asking for a reward for leads leading to an arrest. And this is actually incredibly common in cases where police have little to go on as far as, you know, asking for a reward. See the Delphi murders. I mean, it took, what, like 3 days before the police popped out almost a $100,000 reward. And I don't want to read into this too much, but it could possibly indicate that the police do, in fact, have that person of interest and haven't released the name to the public, to preserve the investigation. Don't know, just speculation, but it's very interesting that we're now 17 days out and there's still been no call money reward for leads. Another thing that I specifically search for is because the nature of the 911 call has been heavily discussed online. What happened? Why were there multiple people there? What exactly, you know, happened with that? And I did see in a police press conference, an officer was asked to confirm or deny whether the two surviving roommates had guests or friends over during the time of the murders. And the police actually declined to answer that question. So as of right now, regardless of what you're seeing online, we simply do not know. And I thought the Gabby Petito case was bad in terms of misinformation and stuff like that. Lori Vallow case was atrocious to begin with. But this case is off the chain. All of these people, trolls mainly, going on Reddit or Facebook and saying, you know, I'm a friend of a friend of, you know, the survivors, and this is actually what happened. Or I'm a friend of the coroner, or I'm a friend of the police officer, and here's actually what happened. And throwing all of these different scenarios as far as, you know, where they were murdered, what they looked like, their wounds. I mean, it's just really gross stuff. I mean, there's an active investigation on here, and then people with nothing better to do get online and spew their bullshit. And then it gets just recycled and recycled and recycled and posted everywhere to the point of you don't know what's factual and what's not. And it's frustrating when you try to keep up with cases like these. And there is, you know, one of those pieces of information, it's circulating online and it's regarding the surviving roommates. And I'm seeing this particular piece posted absolutely everywhere. And please, 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 please take it with a grain of salt. This person says that they were aware of what happened and, you know, witnessed this interaction. The story goes that people were commenting on one of the victim's Instagram posts. And two people who claimed that they were there with the surviving roommates, Dylan and Bethany, responded. After the murders were announced and everyone realized that there were two surviving roommates, you know, they realized the situation that people were killed on the second and third floors and that the two roommates, two girls on the first floor, had been spared, had survived, had no idea, apparently. The information came out immediately that they didn't hear anything happen. Everyone and their mother decided to get online and start trolling them, cursing them, sending them death threats. You know, they got entirely off of social media. So this particular exchange took place on one of the victim's Instagram posts. And supposedly what happened is two people who were present during the 911 call on the initial discovery came to bat because everyone was accusing the two girls who survived. And they came on and like, hey, no, we were there. That didn't happen. At least that's what these people are claiming. Again, take it with a grain of salt. So these people claim that Dylan and Bethany couldn't get in touch with the victims. So they went upstairs, which is where the kitchen was, and that's where they discovered Ethan. Supposedly, he was on the kitchen floor. They noticed that something was wrong. It was really grotesque. They ran out of the house, where one of them called 911, but then promptly fainted. The other one became hysterical, and there were people who were walking by, you know, in the neighborhood, and they came over to see what was happening. And they took the phone, and that's who actually spoke with the 911 operator, like the dispatcher. It was just a random passerby who took the phone after seeing the commotion. Now, I'm seeing this information passed around like Halloween candy, but here's the thing. It directly conflicts with the coroner's report that says all four victims were murdered in their beds. Period. Full stop. And to me, that's the only information I need to write this one off. Now, could the hysterical person, 911 call, passerby, all of that still be valid? Sure, absolutely. But apparently, all four victims were, in fact, found in their beds per the coroner's report. And guys, I'm going to trust that coroner's report before I trust anything from some random anonymous internet user. Furthermore, I'm not sure if you guys have heard, but there were two other stabbing attacks that have taken place with a lot of similarities to this one. So there was one stabbing attack in Salem, Oregon on August 13th of 2021. Travis and Jamelyn Juetten were attacked by a masked intruder and they were stabbed numerous times. Travis, unfortunately, and sadly died in the attack, and somehow Jamelyn survived 19 stab wounds. For that attack, last year, no one's been arrested or even been a public person of interest in that particular attack. And then in Pullman, Washington, back in 1999, two Washington State University students were stabbed as they both slept. They did survive, though, but they still, a masked intruder came in and stabbed them while they were sleeping. Again, in that case, no one has ever been arrested. The police did come out and say that they have taken an incredibly close look at all of these cases, and they do not believe that they are connected, at least that they do not have the evidence to prove that they are connected. And something I found very interesting, though, about the Moscow attack as well as the Washington and Oregon attack is that the Washington and Oregon attacks happened on August 13th and June 14th. The Moscow attack happened on November 13th. So we have 13th and 14th days of the month for three different attacks. 8/13, 6/14, and then now 11/13. So I just found that to be very, very interesting. Three different murder sets, three different states over the same two numerical days. And lastly, just to talk about evidence, because I think a lot of people are curious as far as what police have had. So the police have published in their most recent press conference on November 27th, well, press release, shall I say, in terms of evidence that they have collected, they have 113 pieces of physical evidence collected and taken to the Idaho State Police Crime Lab. 4,000 crime scene photographs were taken. They've developed multiple three-dimensional scans of the residence, and the ISP forensic science scientists and technicians worked hundreds of hours going over and poring over the evidence. And they also have had 488 digital media submissions that have been submitted to the FBI link. And they have really put out a call for CCTV footage, security cam, like Ring doorbell, you know, CCTV footage. If you have security cameras, like my home, my entire front of my house is covered in cameras. Sorry, not taking that chance. So it makes sense that the police inquired, put out a public request for submitting footage on that night. There was also, supposedly, I saw a blip on the news that there may have been a suspicious man caught on a CCTV footage near the home in between 3 and 4 a.m. I haven't been able to find much more information on that. And trust me, I have searched high and low. That, again, is not official. It did not come from police. It came from internet sleuth or rumor mill. The police have said that they have logs of suspicious people that they are looking into, but nothing concrete and specific like what's making the rounds online. So I just really wanted to do a really quick update episode. I'm completely enthralled by this case. I hope more than anything. I mean, it's horrendous. It's so rare that you have four young people who were literally about to graduate college. Kaylee was planning to move to Texas. They were starting their lives, you know, as adults. And tragedy, just ultimate tragedy struck, and they were brutally, heinously murdered. And as all of you likely know too, stabbing is such a personal way to kill and be killed. I saw a couple articles about how this may be a sexually motivated crime, that the killer may be sexually frustrated. Apparently, stab wounds too. There have been a couple studies, and the number of stab wounds can actually tie into motive. Apparently, the FBI has studied this, and the number of stab wounds has a direct correlation with the level of motive, with the type of motive, and then also level of like sexual frustration. It's fascinating, but my heart absolutely breaks for the community. Can you imagine being a student at the University of Idaho right now? Four of your classmates, four of your peers are brutally murdered in a home, right, literally one block from campus. No suspects. No one's been arrested. You can't trust the police because they've been caught lying and walking back bad information. So, you know, how would you feel? And I think that fear is just, oh, it gives me chills because I couldn't live there right now, to be honest with you. So all the people in that community banding together, that is a show of strength if I've ever seen it. But definitely plan to keep, the next episode is, in fact, guys, going to be The Dark Side of Disney Part 2. My sincerest apologies that was not this episode, but I've just been so far down the rabbit hole on this case that I wanted to do the most updated, up-to-date, segment on it that I possibly could. So, as always, you're listening to We Saw the Devil. I'm Robin. And you can find us at wesawthedevil.com. From there, you can find us across all social media, including our Patreon. And if you've enjoyed this episode, felt like you learned something or stayed up to date on the case, please take 20 seconds out of your day and drop a 5-star review on iTunes. It would be greatly appreciated. And I will for real see you guys on Friday. Until next crime.